Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Melissa Allen, Assistant Secretary for Administration at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Well, I'd like to talk to you about some of the challenges facing the new administration. I know that you've participated in several of the endowment's forums on the future of civil service. Can you tell us what you think? What might contribute to making the civil service stronger in the 21st century?
I think the biggest challenge for the I think there are two big challenges for the civil service. I should say it that way. The first is to instill not a sense of accountability, because I believe that that's there, but a way of measuring accountability and holding people accountable at the most senior levels of the career civil service. And I don't have an answer for the format for that. I mean, somebody said, what is your magic bullet? I have said this before in some of the Pricewaterhouse forums, and I'll say it in other forums, is that at its most extreme, it seems to me that eventually you would have an executive service where we actually enter into employment contracts. And we enter into employment contract with an agency that says, in the next number of years, I'm going to get Y done for you. And at the end of that period, we can renegotiate my contract, or else I can go find another job. That's probably the ultimate type of thinking in terms of where I can see the accountability issue going. But in the interim, I think we're challenged to hold people accountable to what is expected of them in terms of the outcomes that the GPRA talks about in terms of what we're delivering to the American public. The other challenge, quite frankly, is this whole issue of brain drain or loss of senior people or whatever. When I came into the government back in 1968, I never thought I would be one of them. But I am, in fact, 53 years old and ready to retire. I can retire, and I can retire now, but I can retire in 2 years with full retirement. There are enormous numbers of people in the government. I forget the numbers that the GAO has been talking about and OPM has been talking about, but there are enormous numbers of people who are eligible to retire. And the challenge is to replace those people both with people from inside the government, that is, grow our own talent, but also from outside the government, when we don't pay competitive salaries, and we probably never will, when the hours and the locations of jobs, many of the government's jobs, are like the people who are fighting forest fires out in the West. I mean, that's not exactly the prime type of recruiting mechanism that you can use. So I think we're faced with accountability on the one side from the most senior levels, and the challenge of bringing people into the government to understand that they don't have to spend a career here. I'm a dinosaur. I've shared this with Mark many times, that I'm a dinosaur of the last generation that's going to spend 35 years in government, probably. In the future, we will hire people and they will move in and out much more flexibly, I think.
Well, you just described two problems, the retirement problem and the difficulty of attracting people to the government. How does DOT attract people?
I think we do probably what a lot of other agencies do. We hire a lot of technical people, a lot of people with engineering backgrounds. We recruit at the best schools. We go out and make internships available. We go out and have programs with scholarships attached to them to help young people understand that they can find a career in the government. The other thing that we do is that we challenge them to understand that their contribution, no matter how long they're here, is going to be a significant one, that they will make a difference. I mean, it's in a way appealing to their altruism, but it's also that you will have significant responsibilities as a very junior person.
We also hear a lot about the impact of technology on government. How do you see technology impacting the future of the Department of Transportation?
In two ways. Certainly on our operational side, the future of the aviation system and the future of the Coast Guard are going to be very technology driven. You know, how we do search and rescue in the Coast Guard in the future will not be the same way that we've done it in the past. The other side of the department, the grant making side of the department, actually is beginning to move out in technology in terms of dealing with grant applications and certifications and reviews and things like that. And we are moving more and more to the point of exchanging information electronically. So we're depending a lot more on the ability to get information back and forth very quickly so we can make decisions.
How do you see the department changing in the decade ahead?
Probably there will be a lot more attention to the issue of what our unique contribution can be to the dialogue about the transportation solutions of the future. I think in the past, we've tended to be the force behind transportation decisions, and beginning with ICE-T back during the Bush administration and with the NEXT-T solution of this administration and future, we will work much more collaboratively with local communities, with all sorts of interests, and we'll require a different skill set of our employees to be able to do that. I mean, it's a different skill set to be able to make a decision and just run with it, as opposed to listening to all sides of an argument and coming to a conclusion.
What advice would you have for somebody who listens to you and says, gee, one day I'd like to be the assistant secretary for administration, and maybe they're somewhat younger and just beginning in their career. What advice would you have for them for the jobs to take and things to be thinking about now?
I think the biggest thing that I would encourage people to do is to move around, to not assume that their career path is necessarily in DOT, not necessarily in one functional area. I mean, I think the thing that's held well for me is the fact that I never could hold a job for very long, or never wanted to hold a job for very long, and got a lot of different experiences. And that they shouldn't be shy about sometimes leveling out in their career and maybe not always advancing. You don't always have to go for the next promotion. It might be the next experience, and to reach for that. And finally, to avail themselves as many opportunities as they can to interact with some of the senior people so that they can understand that sort of process of decision making, and to observe it and to participate in it as much as possible.
We hear that the civil service is kind of an impersonal system, and I'm wondering, did you have mentors in your career?
I certainly did. At the time, I wouldn't have thought of them as mentors, but certainly Admiral Isaac Kidd, who was the chief of Navy Materiel with the Manpower Action Council, was a mentor. Howard Messner, who hired me over to OMB and raised me up through the management side of OMB, was a mentor. And within the Department of Transportation, there have been several, including the current secretary, who's given me rein to do a lot of different things that I never thought I could get done and would get done.
And I guess, how valuable is that in someone's career, and what type of things should they be getting from that person?
It's valuable in the sense that it helps you be able to advance and sort of stretch yourself. On the other hand, I don't think you can depend on mentors to do that for you. And I think you have to listen to what they're saying to you and push them and push yourself to stretch out and do things. And I think the one caution that I would give is that you don't let a mentor break down all the barriers for you. They can't be the one who always gets you the new job or always gets you the new assignment or whatever. I think sometimes you have to do that on your own and sort of say, I'm free. It's like a child growing up. You know, I get to make my own decisions. I get to make my own mistakes.
Earlier you talked about appealing to the altruism of people who now join the federal government. I wonder if you could contrast that perhaps to your feelings when you first joined some time ago.
If I admitted to I came into the federal government sure that I would leave within 3 years, having been told by my father that I should earn some money after college. So I don't know where the altruism was there, but it really was the challenge that kept me there. It was the experience and the responsibility that I was given at a very young age to do things that I wouldn't have been given in other environments. You know, I was responsible for a study of how we handled weapons explosives down at Indian Head at the ordnance facility down there. I did the Manpower Action Council when I was 26 years old. I mean, you don't get that type of experience in the private sector, or at least my sense is you don't get that opportunity.
Yeah, we hear a lot from people who 30 years or so ago said that the new technology and the major challenges were in government. Do you still think that's true?
I actually think it's probably shared a lot more than it used to be, and that if I were to counsel somebody coming into government, I would say to them, don't think of this as a 30-year career, but think about what advantages you can get from working in the government, and then what advantages you can get from working in other sectors.
Well, thank you very much, Melissa, for spending time with us this evening. I'm afraid we're out of time, but I've enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Government Leaders. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. To learn more about the endowment's programs and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.